Francesca present Seven Matrimony.
All right, we're here with another episode of Cinematrimony. We are at home this time, so we are not immediately walking out of the movie, but we did see it today. We are talking about Django Unchained.
The D is silent.
The D is silent. So, Francesca, as always, I like to hear your reaction first, because, especially in this case, I have suspicions that the difficult-to-enjoy parts of this movie may have affected you more than me. So let's start with your, when you weren't enjoying this movie, how unpleasant was it?
Well, at the end of the day, it's a Western. It's
that's
people
true.
Shooting people, we and have, that's the point of the movie.
We have discussed this before, that you are not a fan of the Western genre at all.
Yeah, pretty much not, because I don't really like watching people shoot each other, and that is certainly, in, you know, with especially with spaghetti westerns, that's what, you know, which is obviously, I don't know what I'm why I'm trying to make the distinction of spaghetti westerns, but I always have the sense that that's like a cheaper,
it's an,
you know,
no.
like
the,
a kind of the, gaudier.
The important distinction is that a spaghetti western has a completely different style to it than a traditional, like, let's say, like a John Ford American.
Okay, so
western.
What I'm talking about is
spaghetti western is,
which is just
is
kind of carnage.
Morricone music and outrageously unconventional photography, and, you know, it's the good, the bad, and the ugly would be the prototypical spaghetti western,
well,
which
so.
I know you're not a fan of, but you do like Morricone, though, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was not. I'll tell you what my main gripe is, and it's not even, I'm sure what it, the reason this happened was because it was being true to form to a spaghetti western, but it's not true to form to a Quentin Tarantino movie, which was that Brunhilde was useless. She was, I kept expecting her to turn around, you know, to save the day and come in with guns a-blazing, and she was just a helpless gal. She
yeah.
didn't do anything the whole movie.
That is a great point, Francesca. This is probably the rare Tarantino movie where there is
like
not a strong female
not
character.
Not rare. It is the only one that I can think of. I can't. I fully
well, there
was
are,
stunned.
There are no female characters in Reservoir Dogs, but
okay,
other than that.
Well, but if a female is present, I was expecting her to be somewhat empowered. And again, I don't know, maybe that's true to form, that, you know, the women are just in peril and that's all they do in westerns.
Not necessarily, but definitely.
I couldn't believe we got to the end of the movie and she hadn't had one badass moment. All she was there to do was to look pretty, which she did very well. But I was really surprised in a Quentin Tarantino movie that she didn't do anything other than scream and look horrified.
That is a great point. And actually, I'm sort of looking forward to Aspect Radio's discussion of this now, because I know Ben Flanagan has written extensively in the past about Tarantino as a feminist filmmaker. I'm kind of curious as to his take on that. Good point, Francesca.
Well,
way to bring
you.
That. But,
yeah. But, I mean, it's just, you know,
I did like Kerry Washington, though, and I especially liked, and I this was like something that I think I visibly reacted to. I really liked her very 60s, 70s flair at the end before the explosion.
Well, it was just charming. But again, it was also girlish.
It was.
It was not like a...
No, it was cutesy.
Yeah, it was a real cutesy moment, which, I mean, you know, Tarantino's done that plenty of times before. But it was just, that's kind of what took me aback, was that there... I mean, she was virtually the only female other than the, you know, barely there, you know, other women in the house.
Zoe Bell wears the mask the whole time.
And Amber Tamblyn, who has the truest cameo of all time,
yeah.
which is just her face for one frame. Well, not a frame, but... For 1 second.
Actually, probably the only female character that gets serious play is Calvin Candy's sister.
Well, and I wouldn't call that serious.
No,
play.
She's not. She's not a very significant character. Yeah.
Looking.
She does get good and blown away.
Yeah. That was. People audibly responded to that.
People dug that, yeah.
Because she was kind of horrible.
Yeah,
just
oh,
sort
for
of
sure. Oh,
and,
no, listen, totally deserved that. But yeah, our we should say our audience was like very audibly reacting to things, which was fun. I enjoyed having a crowd like that to watch this movie with.
But I love Christoph Waltz. I love him, love him, yep. love him. And he was given such a like hero character too. It, like I'm sure that was nice for him. Having heard him now on Fresh Air, he is quite a sweet guy. So I'm sure it was nice for him to be like mm-hmm. full on like a good guy in a movie. He does kill people for money. Okay.
True. But they're all bad like, guys, though.
He's a very noble guy, and I would hazard to say, really, a much, you know, better guy than Jamie Foxx's character, than Django. Like, because Django, well, you know, kind of gets dirty with people who don't necessarily deserve it, you know?
Who doesn't deserve it?
Well, the other gentlemen who are, you know, he's being very cruel to the other black men to make, you know...
Well, he is saying that's the means that he has to go through to accomplish.
Well, and like
it. Yeah,
you know,
he doesn't enjoy
the gentleman
doing
that. Who you know gets ripped apart by dogs.
Yeah,
remind me again why I don't like this movie. You know that he kind of more so than Schultz is kind of here's, like, well, I'll do what I have to do.
Here's
and
how
Schultz
I,
is kind of like, oh yeah.
Here's how I think we. Here's how I think as a. As an audience, you can justify accepting that moment. Because I thought about that, too, when you were watching it. I think that he would say, look, there's nothing that he can do to stop that guy from getting killed in that moment. Calvin is going to kill that guy. That guy has no chance of surviving. And
well,
if he steps in to sort of show his moral outrage to it, it's also going to jeopardize everything else.
Well, but, I mean, basically, here's the thing. Django just wants to get his wife back, and he doesn't seem to show very much remorse for who dies for him to do it, whereas Schultz does have sympathy towards other people and take actions to try to sort of help innocent people.
You're right.
When
he does.
Can, and
he does.
Django doesn't.
Schultz, in the end, really dies purely for principle.
Yeah, for, well, and for, you know, Django's happy ending.
I guess yeah. he. I guess in part he does that. No, but see, here's the thing. He could have shaken his hand and walked out of there.
Could he have, though?
I don't think it's entirely clear that Calvin was going to screw them over. It appeared that what Schultz did was simply just that he would not have been able to live with himself if he didn't kill Calvin. Because Calvin was
well, but again, you
the
could
most
say...
abhorrent person he had ever met on all of his journeys through this gross place.
But you could say that he also... That was for the benefit of, you know, he knew shooting him would result in him being his own death, but, you know, it was kind of it was going to help more people.
Maybe.
For Calvin to be dead.
I think.
It was a disgusting
as
you know, place.
Yeah. As a plot device, what it reminded me of, and I think I've probably seen this elsewhere too, but it reminded me of Obi-Wan from Star Wars, where he basically lets Darth Vader kill him because... It's like, well, you know, it's time for me to exit the story, and now the hero that I've trained is ready to take over. And I think also it's really important. I mean, the movie benefits from the fact that Django is the one that does it all by himself in the end. I think it would have really cheapened what Django does if Schultz helped him on the final leg of it, you know?
I'm not arguing with it as a plot point.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying.
But no, I agree with your
I think he was actually a little bit the more merciful and, you know, because ultimately Django just wanted his wife back.
Mm-hmm.
The end. Like, that was it. And, you know, seemed a little bit like Schultz had it in mind to help, you know, people. I mean,
but Django
that's what
does...
he's doing. He went back with Django...
Yeah.
To help him, like that was the whole. There was no real reason for him to go back. He could have just freed him.
Django
but he went
does,
back with him to help him.
Django does, by the way, kill some people that he doesn't have to kill because they're terrible people. Like the basically that cabin full of rednecks. He walks in and says,
D'Artagnan,
mother, whatever, and then blows them all away, which I'm sure he didn't have to do. He did that because they had it coming, basically.
Speaking of mother whatever, let's talk about Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, man.
Easily a worse character. Not easily, but I think he is set up to be the villain of the piece. More
yeah.
so than,
oh, he's,
than Monsieur Candide.
I mean, Candy is a bad, bad dude, though. And
yeah, but, you know, it's the man behind the man.
Yes,
and
I agree.
And he's, you know, basically...
He's the enabler.
Turned, upon, you know, against his people, like, all of them, because he's spurring Candy on.
Well, that's what Django says. He said, how many thousands came before have you seen come through this place?
Right. Well, and you... you didn't notice this in the film, but when he first has his palaver with Candy in the library, that's when he dropped the act.
I guess you didn't notice it until he picked over his cane. Explain this a little more. Like, go back to people who don't know what you're talking about. When he drops the cane at the end during his last scene, I was thoroughly shocked and said, "Oh, yeah, it was an act." But you said that he actually dropped it earlier in the movie.
It wasn't that he dropped the cane; it's that he was doing this. Oh, like, they were both engaging in this character, where, like, he was this, you know, crippled old man who was kind of sassy. He was, like, basically the sassy black man, you know, character. And, but when he went to the library, he did, and up to that point, I was going, gosh, like, I've never seen Samuel L. Jackson do this much of a character. And then he goes to the library, and he's doing Samuel L. Jackson.
Yes,
like, those mother...
You're right. Now, that's a good point, that when he...
Like, that's when it becomes apparent that it's a charade. And then they go back in, he's like, oh, yeah.
You're saying, so it's basically, it's even a charade that Calvin is aware of.
Yeah, that, like, he knows that he's... putting
that
on a thing, but
that's
socially acceptable
than,
for them to, you know, for him to kind of be the court jester and the yes man.
That's,
but he's actually, you know, pretty much an equal. I mean,
you know,
also,
I didn't really think about
it.
It
gives it away because he's sitting there drinking a drink, waiting for him in the library.
Yeah,
like, how would he help himself to a drink if he was really like the servant?
I did think that was weird that he has like a little snifter of brandy there.
Yeah,
when he
because
comes in.
He's.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way. You kind of also get a sense just from the fact that at that, you know, moment he's calling the shots that, like, perhaps because he's been there so long, he is actually, you know, really the man behind the man. Like, he's the guy.
Well, he said he's been there for generations.
76 years. So he's kind of, you know, he's sort of the puppet master, maybe a little bit.
It is definitely, I would say that is the Hans Landa slash, you know, I don't know. I would say it is one of Tarantino's better dark creations. And that's saying something from a guy who has written some fantastic, twisted, evil characters. Ben Flanagan calls Steven the best performance in this movie. And he says that Samuel L. Jackson should be getting Oscar consideration.
I thought that too. But again, and that's kind of what turned me on to the fact that it was... Like, the library thing made me go, oh, okay, this is what's going on. Because up to that point, I was going, like, wow, this is, like, really not... Because Samuel L. Jackson has just kind of made a career of being Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, sure.
And good at it.
Sure.
So I was kind of thinking to myself, like, wow, this is really, like, very different for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, well, okay, so now he's being Samuel L. Jackson. Oh, okay, so he was just... That was just a pretend thing. And, of course... You know, it's kind of played as foolishness when they're at the table before things go sideways, that he's standing at his ear and, like, making quips and, you know, doing that and that. But that's kind of,
that's
just what
thing.
They put on because that's socially acceptable instead of, you know, I mean, it gets kind of Shakespearean up in there.
He has to make Calvin.
He's a sorcerer next to him, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, I actually think that's not the only sort of allusion to that. I think a lot of this... You know, just down from the fact that they really are, they bring up, you know, the German mythology really early on.
Yeah, except for
that
again.
That's made up. That's not Brumhilde. Brumhilde.
Yeah, Brumhilde is supposed to be a bad mama jamma.
Yeah, Brumhilde is a Valkyrie, right?
I don't know.
But whatever. I mean, the point is, regardless of the name, they're
Maybe
bringing
it's not
up.
Made up. You should
very,
never make a statements like that. We are not.
No, you're right. But the point being, yeah, Ben Stark would probably know. But the point being, like, I think there are a lot of, like, references to the fact that this is sort of a mythological, you know, this is the hero's journey thing going on. And that also, to me, is part of the justification for the absurdly, laughably bloody...
You say laughably.
...shootout.
I was not enjoying myself.
I will say, I didn't really like it for a few reasons. I didn't like it as much as I wished I had for a few reasons. One, I really, and this is such a rare thing for Tarantino, but I really didn't like his musical choice in that scene to go with the, He uses hip-hop at a couple of points in the movie that I think it's effective, but he uses it there and it doesn't work. And I guess also, you know, a lot of people have compared this to the House of Blue Leaves sequence from Kill Bill 1 where she hacks 88 people to pieces. And obviously that is extremely gory. But
it's creative, whereas this was just shooting people.
Also,
and big squibs.
If you recall, it was in black and white. And I think that was a very good decision on his part in Kill Bill, because I think in the end, it's definitely distasteful. And I think he left it in color here because...
Well, that's spaghetti western-y too.
Yes.
To have like the Technicolor red.
Yeah, and I think also I think it's pretty clear that he's like trying to make a point about painting the walls with blood in this plantation house.
Right. Don't get
but
any
ideas. Again, it's like, that's the end result of it, but I kind of just didn't really enjoy getting there, you know? I could have, I enjoy that the rest of the movie, the house is splattered in blood, but I don't really, I guess I just didn't really have that much fun watching people explode.
This is the other thing, is that, yeah, like, the crazy explosive squibs were like effective the first couple times, but then that just kept on being how he killed everybody. Was that it was really like, you know, somebody was like Jackson Pollock, you know, like huge splash of blood.
Pollock.
Anytime anybody got killed, it was like a wave of blood came
out.
It
started reminding me of like the Robert Rodriguez Grindhouse movie, which is not a good thing to me. It was just kind of silly, and I don't know. I guess that's probably the one part of the movie that I wasn't in love with, and I didn't really have that much fun.
And here's the other
with.
Thing that made it not as visually interesting. In addition to just, they were just flat out killing each other with guns, it was just Django. That's where you would have benefited to have a partner, is that it makes
no,
the gunfight a little more interesting.
Yeah, but he had to, well, action-wise it does, but he, plot-wise, it was very important that it was now Django
then,
is walking
you know?
Through the fires of hell to go get Brunhilde.
Yeah. Well, and then let's talk about Quentin Tarantino's terrible Australian accent.
No,
the other guy
didn't have an
accent, so why didn't he just not have
an
accent?
No, there were two Australians, and Michael Parks is the third guy, who's just kind of a recurring character in Tarantino. And he basically plays the same character every time he shows up, which is the sort of, you know, kind of sheriff-y character who is suspicious of everything. But here's why I think they did it. I think that Tarantino decided to make himself and the other guy Australian because Quentin Tarantino can't do a Southern accent, but he can do an Australian accent.
I don't know that he could. I couldn't understand anything he said.
I was okay with it. I actually thought...
Yeah, but I can understand an Australian accent. I couldn't understand anything he was saying.
It was a little weird, but I guess it was kind of funny to me. I don't know. I was okay with it. It was a clever way to get him free again.
I guess my problem is he doesn't give himself... It's not Alfred Hitchcock cameos. He gives himself
roles,
too
much
and
meat.
He's not a very good actor.
No, he's not.
It's really distracting. Like, you know, M. Night Shyamalan, at least he didn't give himself, like, other than The Village, but that's a whole other
It just really didn't... No,
he wouldn't really, really intrude and... Quentin Tarantino, it always just feels like he sticks out like a sore thumb. Like
I don't
he's
know.
So clearly trying to give himself an awesome role, and it's just not.
It just didn't really bother
actor.
Me, and I like what he did to himself. You can't get too mad at him. He blew himself up with dynamite in his scene, in his cameo.
I was happy that that's what happened.
But listen, speaking of sort of silly comedy, The KKK scene...
That was hilarious.
Honestly, it was comedic scene. And it was like... It was... sometimes when Tarantino tries to do straight comedy, it doesn't work. But that was really funny.
Well, and it was funny because it wasn't so absurd that you couldn't imagine it happening, actually.
Right.
It was guys sniping at each other and be like, well, why didn't you know...
I didn't actually feel like... I was like worried... When they start getting into the scene, I'm like, well, this is going to be stupid that they're like breaking out wacky comedy in the middle of this.
But
it actually did
felt
work.
A little authentic.
Yeah.
Like maybe this conversation did actually happen at
right.
a time that somebody's wife made crappy hoods for them and then they got mad and he gets really mad
off.
And they're insulting his wife.
It was good. It was funny.
It was genuinely funny. And, you know, we should say that we had a fairly mixed race audience.
Yeah.
And nobody was, like, storming out outraged.
Oh, no, like, no, no.
Everybody seemed to be enjoying themselves a lot.
Especially the end. I mean, honestly, there the place was... There was applause at the closing credits. There was, like, people were... Yeah, there was. And especially, I would say the biggest reaction we got was when Steven gets it in the kneecaps. Like, people really got fired up.
Well, and at
that
point,
that.
He's so detestable.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it was interesting, I thought, with the Candy character, because obviously the wrestling was pretty off-putting, but he was still kind of playing him a little bit, like a little bit of a charming Southern gentleman. And I was kind of going like, okay, so when is he going to really make us hate him?
Yes.
Because he's kind of...
Well,
I
that
mean,
would be the D'Artagnan,
scene. And that's when I was like, yes. Okay, so now well, we officially really, really hate this
there's
man.
There's two scenes to me
because he's clearly
that,
very cruel.
And I'm down with Samuel L. Jackson in this movie. I thought he was great. To me, the Leonardo DiCaprio performance is the best thing about this movie. And it's because of two scenes. He just totally... kills me. The D'Artagnan scene, he is awful, awful. And in a, like a special, horrible, condescending way.
Yeah.
And then when the scene where, you know, when he's come back in from the library and he does, I mean, it's like a classic Tarantino monologue that
right.
where he's going to force them to buy Broomhilda. That, and he blows up after he does the big long monologue about the skull.
Right.
That is an awesome scene.
Well,
it's just, it's awesomely written and it's awesomely performed. And DiCaprio, you know, I mean, I think I've done it enough on this podcast. I love Leonardo DiCaprio right now. I just, everything he does
the
in
Gilbert
the last
great
few years,
alums,
he is great.
Everybody gives all these props to, you know, Johnny Depp for being able to turn in a gonzo performance. But this is kind of the first time that Leonardo DiCaprio's gotten to do it, but he's always been a character actor at heart.
Yes, he is.
And now that he's kind of outgrowing his boyish good looks and he's kind of not the handsome boy he once was, he needs to be doing more of these things.
Yep.
He's just too good to just be, you know,
the
male
leading man.
Ingenue. He really needs
even
to be doing
he,
crazy
but
stuff
even when
like
he's
this.
Done leading man roles, like in Inception and in Shutter Island, he has scenes in both of those movies where he gets to go off the rails a little bit, and he's great at that. Like, when
yeah,
he loses his mind,
actor.
He's very good.
He's a good... I mean, look, he's a good actor anyway, you slice it. But this was kind of like... You could tell he was really enjoying it. He was playing
yeah.
a lot of colors. Like I said, I mean, he's a man who's got, you know... He's making men wrestle each other for fun and profit. Like, for his just
he's
his own personal...
He's like,
wrestle to the death.
Yes.
Wrestle to the death. And yet, he was playing it in such a way that I was kind of like, you're actually going to have to work a little harder to make people really want him to meet a grizzly in.
Because
mm-hmm. he was kind of playing, he just really, like, dug that Southern gentleman. And, of course, I guess part of the credit goes, of course, to Tarantino's writing as well. But, like, I think
oh,
in
yeah.
a lesser actor, it could have fallen flat to do that sort of caricature of Old South.
Yep.
But he just, he nailed it. He really
no, he is, his character is not an accent.
On.
There's some emoting going on, especially in that D'Artagnan scene, which is not really just about dialogue. Like, it's the way that he delivers it, like he's being such a caring and sympathetic person, and he just, you know, it's really disgusting. Like, that emotion that he shows in that scene... That's where I think that's really the moment that Tarantino and DiCaprio both were able to make it okay for us for the rest of the movie to say, I hope something terrible happens to this guy. Although actually it doesn't really, he kind of goes easy, but you know, again, you can, what it does is it sells you on why, Schultz feels the need. Why he just cannot
well,
stop himself
that whole
from
thing
killing
with
him.
The harp and you know the flashbacks. And
yeah,
I mean, that ultimately, you know, it that seems to be the driving force for Schultz to want to kill him is that he had watched that atrocity and you know, I don't think he's really worried about Brunhilde and
why was
Django
the Beethoven
that
bringing
anymore.
That up? Do you think
just because it was a harp. She was playing it hard. It was just, you know.
Yeah.
It was a tense moment, and she was playing kind of stringent music.
Right.
I think that was just what was happening in that moment.
What did you think about just in general the Jamie Foxx performance? Because we really haven't talked about that.
He was really good. I haven't really up to this point had any strong feelings one way or the other of Jamie Foxx.
Me neither.
He was really quite good in this. I enjoyed watching him.
Yeah, he's likable, and he's not, you know, I don't think this character, he kind of needs the steely, resolved, leading man, action hero thing, and, you know, he does fine with it. I do think, you know, because there's been, like, a lot of discussion out there about how Will Smith was originally the guy they were going to have do this, but I feel like Jamie Foxx has a little bit of a nastiness to him that worked really well in this movie. Like,
yeah,
you know, he's likable, but also, like, he does have that don't F with me look on him, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I don't think...
Dude can ride a horse, too, by the way.
I mean, like, I love... Well, and as I told you, I don't know what you're doing in the bathroom, but I am always reading Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah, I didn't know this. And that he rides horses?
Yeah, he was riding... He said that... I don't know if it was the horse at the end or the one he rode through most of the movie, but that it was actually his horse. That he's from Texas originally, and I think he has a farm there, but, like, he grew up riding horses, so that was, like, not a thing for him to learn to ride horses.
Which he's doing, like, horse tricks at the end.
Yeah, well, and I think that was probably... I'm sure that was, you know, just because he knows how to ride a horse.
Right.
But, you know, it kind of... I mean, not that it was a hugely realistic movie anyways, but that was kind of, like... His really, like, upbeat ending.
Yeah.
That, you know, like, they're not... They didn't just win. They're, like, dancing that they won,
that's,
you know?
Right. Like, and they're having, and they're being burning silly. Burning ruins and, of the plantation.
You know, it's like they're giddily excited.
Yep.
And ready to go start their lives. But, yeah, he is apparently... He did not like
it was actually,
to ride a horse for it
was,
this movie.
It was a little bit... Even though I hate this movie, it was a little bit like the end of Death Proof, which is kind of silly, that they've, like, made this very serious chase the whole movie of trying to... kill this guy, and then they kill him, and they all like do a little dance, basically.
Well,
but I think it's kind of like you've earned it. Like we need to give the audience a few minutes to really enjoy what just happened and be happy about it.
And also, our fun trivia that we learned from listening to Fresh Air is that Christoph Waltz had injured himself. So that
he like broke his hip, right?
I don't remember what he broke, but he was pretty poorly in. Injured, and that was part of the reason he drove a carriage as opposed to a horse.
That's
for
right.
A great part
because
of
he fell off a horse, yeah.
I don't know that he fell off a horse. I think it was like a, I don't know.
He did
but
something.
Early on in production, he hurt himself, so it kind of contributed to the fact that he drove around in a dental, you know, whatever.
Right.
And I guess it was, I think it's, you know, almost supposed to be a joke that his name is Dr. King.
I didn't even think about that.
I thought about that the first time I heard that was a character's
name.
It
didn't even occur to me.
You're a dope. I don't... Yeah, like, this is... Maybe you do this podcast just so you can learn interesting things to tell your friends.
I'm not
trying
to...
You miss so much.
I'm not trying... look, I'm... You're coming off looking pretty perceptive here.
Oh, just coming off
looking... You're fooling people.
What are you talking about?
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, all right.
Anyway...
But yes, so
no,
I
that
don't
was
think,
great. I didn't. I mean, honestly, I don't think I'm the only one.
If it was any other filmmaker, you'd be like, "Come on!" But it's Tarantino, so you're like, "Well, that." I can't believe you didn't notice.
No,
that.
I did not notice that.
That didn't occur to you.
No.
Good grief.
I wonder if it occurred to if you're a listener and that and you did notice that also before Francesca just said it. Then please comment and tell
also,
me.
Also, listeners. Bruno Mars has a CD out called.
No, don't talk about the Bruno Mars album title.
I just want an opinion from somebody. It's called Unorthodox Jukebox. Is it supposed to be a play on Orthodox Jew?
This is the worst
because
thing.
Because if it is, why aren't people upset about that?
Totally,
that doesn't seem like an okay thing to do.
This is totally in your head.
I don't know, Matt. I don't think it is.
And totally has nothing to do with Django Unchained.
Well, obviously not, but it does have to do with wordplay, possibly. But I don't think it's possibly. I think I'm just the first person to have realized that he kind of made a poor judgment call.
Anyway,
there.
We're not talking about Bruno Mars anymore. Do you have anything else that jumped out at you in this movie that you particularly liked?
Mm.
Overall, you sound like you liked this movie, for sure.
I mean, yeah, as, you know, I don't always, like, really, I don't like spend... Mm.
You're to
I'd rather not watch Tarantino on the big screen. Yeah, because it's just... Yeah, I'd rather watch it at home and crochet and where it's easier for me to ignore...
Because of the violence?
Violence and male anatomy but I guess, on the screen.
Oh, there was a lot of male anatomy in this movie. How about...
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think that for someone like you who, like, you don't get a lot of enjoyment out of uber graphic violence.
I'd say I don't get any enjoyment, Matt.
Well, yeah, I was phrasing it a certain way. But anyway,
yes,
but you do
in an incorrect way.
But you do still have an appreciation for
I like the plots,
performances and the screenwriting talent of Tarantino.
Right. So that's what I'm saying though. Right. I don't like it to be shoved in my face in a gigantic screen. I'd rather just be somewhere where I can
And you're
be
talking
listening.
About the movie, not about male anatomy.
All right. Real funny, palsy.
Well, so...
Should we tell our people what's happening right now?
Well, you're decorating cookies right now.
Indeed.
For Francesca's kitchen.
Oh, Matt, I wasn't trying to get a plug.
You're burgeoning...
I was just trying to draw a picture.
Cookie enterprise. You're gonna... We've remarked often that you're gonna be the Mildred Pierce of cookies.
Well, and I don't like
except
that
without, except without the,
Listen, Naomi
Campbell,
the Kennedy,
treacherous
a
daughter. Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. No, all right. Well, listeners, as always, thank you for tuning in to Cinematrimony. We, I'm really curious as to what the sort of reaction to this movie is from different crowds, because I imagine most film nerds listeners probably liked it. But if you have your own opinion about it, please drop us a comment anywhere, either on the Facebook page or on the Film Nerds blog, wherever you happen to be listening to this. And
if you like this podcast, share it with your friends.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Tell them to comment on things, because sometimes I think no one is listening.
No, people are listening.
You say that.
They just don't comment.
Well, that's hurtful.
Anyways, make Francesca feel better and send us some comments.
I have very low self-esteem. For Film Nerds, I'm Francesca Scalise.
All right. Thanks, guys, and we will talk to you next time. For whatever our first podcast of 2013 will be.
I suspect Les Miserables.
Probably, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Farewell.